Welcome, listeners. This is episode number 131 of the Veeam Community Podcast. And today we have an extra special lineup, just like we always do here on the Veeam Podcast. And my name is Clint Wyckoff, and with me today I have co-host Anthony Spiteri, who's dialing in all the way from Perth, Australia. So, Anthony, it's great to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you, Clint. Good evening, good morning, or good afternoon.
Awesome. We also have an extra special guest with us today. Again, just like we always do here on the Veeam Community Podcast. So, you know, Anthony, whenever we were talking about what we wanted to discuss today, obviously we're just coming off the heels of VMworld last week in Barcelona, and then a few weeks before that in the US. We wanted to do a quick recap. And who better to help us out with the recap than none other than Jorge de la Cruz. Jorge, say hello to our listeners.
Hello, Clint. Hello, everyone. Thank you for having me today on this podcast.
Awesome. Jorge, where do you live at, by the way?
I live here in the UK, in London, but I'm originally from Spain, as you can hear by my accent.
What part of Spain? Barcelona, by chance? That's where I was last week.
Yes, and that's awesome. But no, I'm in a city close to Madrid.
Awesome. So were you at either VMworld by chance?
Not this year, unfortunately, but I was covering both of them with the general sessions, live broadcasting and all that stuff. So I just covered them by remote.
Awesome. But you blog a lot about, obviously, the different things, and you have a very popular blog site that, you know, that is out there also. So what, just curious, can you tell the listeners what your blog is?
Yes, of course. So my blog is jorgedelacruz.es. I've been covering the whole VMworld announcements on this blog in Spanish.
Awesome. So we'll get to that in a second. So Anthony, what was your favorite part of VMworld USA? Obviously you were in Vegas. You made the long journey over.
I was in Vegas. It wasn't too long ago, but it feels like it was a while ago now. But, you know, Vegas has the tendency to do that to you if you're there for more than 3 days. But, no, it was a great week. I think the biggest thing was the energy that I felt at US that I hadn't felt in a while. So, you know, I felt like the last couple of VMworlds I've been to, well, that was my fourth in a row and sort of the fifth in 4 years. And probably had the biggest amount of energy since probably my first one in 2012. Which is really good because I think VMware have recognized that, you know, they've got to do something special to sort of get the market back into gear and to see them as being relevant again after a couple of years of maybe slipping a little bit. And, you know, from all intents and purposes, I think they achieved that. There were some really good announcements there around, I think, you know, one of the major announcements was obviously the AWS partnership coming to fruition in the GA in North America. Anyway, I know you guys actually spent a bit of time talking to Frank Denneman in the last two community podcasts ago, taken last week, and you know that's worth a listen to in the second half of that one anyway, because he talks a little bit about, you know, what makes up VMware Cloud and AWS. But from our perspective at Veeam as well, we were one of two launch partners from an availability point of view, so that was really exciting to sort of take a few questions about that and sort of get asked how have you guys made it work and, you know, what's different about it. But from our point of view, you know, it's not that much different to back up workloads in the VMware Cloud and AWS using Veeam Backup Replication than what Veeam customers are currently used to. So, yeah, that was really good. And, you know, apart from that big one, I think the big announcements, the feel that I got is VMware really focusing on this DevOps-y world. You know, it's kind of the cool thing. It's the hipster thing in IT at the moment, I suppose. You know, and they're really trying to capture that market with a lot of SaaS-based applications that are doing online management, online automation, monitoring, analytics. And I guess the big thing from my perspective is that NSX has finally reached a level of maturity where it's now going cross-platform, so into the likes of AWS, into Azure, and across different clouds. So I'm really excited about the maturity of NSX at the moment as well.
Well, you covered a lot of things there, Anthony.
I get excited.
That was like, you did get a little excited. So this was actually my first USA one that I've missed since 2012. I remember that VMworld. That was my first one that I ever went to. That was the year of Bon Jovi, yeah, if I'm not mistaken. San Francisco. Yeah, that was a good one for sure. So you mentioned like how in the past it's felt like kind of like VMworld isn't all that. And I would have to agree with you, but I also would say that this year, at least for me in Barcelona, because VMworld USA and VMworld Europe are very, like, they're two completely different animals. And last year was my first time attending the VMworld in Europe. And I don't know, maybe Jorge, if you've been to both of them before, there is a huge difference between the vibe and the feel. And even like the expo floor is completely different in VMworld in Europe. But I would definitely, I would think that this year, at least for me, was kind of meh also. I mean, obviously, especially in Europe, because the whole VMware cloud on AWS in Europe is not even applicable. Whereas in the USA, it had a big splash. There was a lot of interest. There was a lot of buzz about it. But yeah, Jorge, I'm curious, like, what your take is. If you've been to both Europe and USA?
Well, in the past, I only attended the VMworld Europe. So I've been attending for a couple of years, like around 4 years to the Europe. So I only have the Europe vision. But I remember that maybe it was last year, it was a bit more powerful in Europe because it was an announcements of real products. Maybe, yeah, it was last year, right? When 6.5 went GA, and that was announced during the VMworld Europe. So,
yep.
I mean, at least last year it was more powerful, but as you said, this year maybe it was a bit more less powerful on Europe because they were the same announcement, and as you were saying, I mean, it was it's not even available yet in Europe, so.
But I think, I mean, VMware has like this the cadence of every other year being what I would call like a splash year. So, you know, last year was 6.5. This year we'd expect them to not have like too many great announcements, at least not like major vSphere related release announcements.
There was like nothing. There was nothing vSphere related, right? Like there was, I couldn't really. I'm looking now, apart from some vSAN stuff, which you know you can say is vSphere related, but. You know, really, there was nothing about the hypervisor, which was interesting and kind of telling at the same time.
Yeah, and it's really awesome just to kind of show you the power of the community to our listeners out there today. You know, just while we were sitting here recording this podcast, we had another one of our Veeam Vanguards join us all the way from West Virginia, actually. Jim Jones is one of our Vanguards. Jim, why don't you say hello to our audience?
Hey, everybody. It's not that far out there. I'm only 4 hours away from... Hi, this is Jim Jones. Kool-Aid IT on Twitter and everywhere, and Kool-Aid.info on the internet. Hello, and how's it going, guys?
Good. So, Jim, you were at VMworld USA, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. So, what we were just kind of recapping with everybody what happened at VMworld USA and VMworld Europe, obviously. Maybe you can, you know, what's your take? What did you like? What did you didn't like? What was kind of the big excitement for you?
Yeah, well, so this was my third VMworld. I've been to 2014 and 2015 previously, and I have to say I was really excited to see the community aspect of it seem to get much stronger this year again. You know, 2014, it was really big. 2015, it kind of backed off a little bit, and this year it was back in full force. You know, from a VMware technology standpoint, me personally, my take seems to be that each VMworld, it kind of feels like they want to present you every technology to get you off of vSphere. You know, it's this to do, you know, the last time it was vCloud Air, now it's we want to get you onto VMware on AWS. They want to get you out of your own data center primarily, which, you know, makes sense. The subscription model is a lot easier to... make the money work from their point of view, you know, maybe a little more manageable support, all that kind of stuff. But you know, for those of us that, you know, infrastructure as a service is not necessarily the you know, gonna be the end game, it's kind of like, okay, so what's now? Especially as you watch, you know, the Hyper-Vs and the Acropolis and the KVMs, you know, you see their evolution, you know, it seems like they're on an upslope, and vSphere is pretty much kind of leveled off.
Well, I mean, VMware for the longest time has been the leader in that market. They're actually the ones that are pushing, you know, the AHVs, the Hyper-Vs of the world to actually try to innovate, to differentiate themselves, to take market share away from VMware. So, you know, if you think about like the traditional vSphere, like they're not selling naked, they're not just selling net new vSphere. They have to sell something else. They have to sell NSX. They have to come up with, you know, different products, whether that be natural products that they make through their own R&D efforts, or if they go out and get those through acquisitions. So like NSX, for instance, vSAN, all the other different components, Horizon View, and then all the DevOps and app development things that VMware does also. I do think it's interesting, and I'm curious of Anthony's opinion on this also, is like the whole vCloud Air network versus the vCloud on AWS coming from a service provider perspective.
I was going to say, obviously there was zero mention. I mean, there was a little bit of mention about vCloud Air in some areas, and obviously OVH has taken over that mantle, having acquired what was the remnants of vCloud Air. But, you know, the great thing about that is I think it put the focus back on the service providers and the previous, what was previously known as the vCloud Air network. And they obviously wanted to rebrand that to get rid of the Air part, and they're now calling that the Veeam Cloud Provider Program, which is kind of close to our Veeam Cloud and Service Provider Program, a little bit VCSP versus VCPP. But look, I think it's a good thing. I mean, they didn't execute well at all on vCloud Air. I think everyone who was around that would be honest if they really were. Even the staunchest VMware supporters would say that was a massive mistake. It's a shame they wasted a couple of VMworlds on that, from my perspective. But look, they've come up strong. And the thing about VMware and AWS, VMware Cloud and AWS, it's not something that's going to take, it's not going to encroach on the service provider market just yet. Because if you look at the price point, you look at what they're targeting, you look at the regions, they're not going for that market yet. So in the next couple of years, the providers are still going to be fairly front and center of that. But understanding that, you know, beyond that, you know, more and more people will look to have a more hybrid approach where they will put some workloads in a VMware cloud and AWS, and then use maybe software as a service or platform as a service off AWS more natively, or Azure. So it's an interesting time we live in. I think they've done the right thing there. The program announcement and the rename was good from my perspective. But yeah, I think overall it's all very good. I think I just wanted to touch on one more thing as well. I mean, Clint, you mentioned that you found Europe a little flat, and I think that might have been some of our other, you know, people who were there, they might have agreed with you a little bit. Is that kind of what you were saying? It was maybe just a little bit flat?
Yeah, to me at least, just the vibe, like if you were going walking the show floor, like in VMworld and other shows that I've been to in recent history, you know, they have these massive expo hall floors. The expo floor at VMworld Barcelona is always much smaller than what it is in the States, and it just kind of felt like very flat. There was a lot of sponsors that appeared to not be there. Not going to name any names, obviously, but there was some ones that actually took me by surprise. Like, wow, they're not at VMworld. And then there was other ones as well, but it didn't feel like it had the vibe, the buzz, like, you know, like you were saying before, like what you got at the USA event.
And you know what? I got to say, that's probably, and people have commented on this as well, it's probably because it was held 2 weeks after the US event. You know, if you look at the main stage, the keynotes are pretty much the same. Almost, they use the same materials. So, you know, that experiment, and I'm not sure why they did it. There was obviously some reason why VMware had to have these events so close this year. It's obviously not worked that well from a Barcelona perspective. I mean, the content is still there. People still got learning. People still network. The social aspect was still great. I still watched all the V Brown Bag tech talks that were live on YouTube. I saw you, Clint, present. But I feel that they made a mistake having it so close. But that said, next year, I think they've gone the opposite way, where they're actually going to have VMworld in Europe in sort of the start of November. So an even bigger gap between US and Europe. So they've gone the other way for next year already, which is interesting. So we'll wait and see what happens next year on that front.
Yeah, that's correct. I think that that the gap for having some months between the VMworlds next year will give us maybe a new vSphere release. I don't know, hopefully. So one thing that one link that I want to share with the listeners of the podcast is the new cloud.vmware.com, which it has absolutely all the new services that VMware had presented and the cloud products as well. So I think that this link will have absolutely everything that that VMware had presented. And not only that, that from here you have some videos per service or product, the pricing sometimes on all the services. So I think this link, it's really important, and it's a really huge bet from VMware with all the cloud with all the cloud muscle that they want to show to the world. What do you think, guys?
Yeah, I'm just going in now, actually. It looks quite interesting.
Yeah, this is the first time I've seen this site, so it's just cloud.vmware.com. But I also, so Anthony, you brought up service providers and how you don't think that vCloud on AWS or VMware Cloud on, I want to make sure I say it correctly, VMware Cloud on AWS will not encroach on the service provider market. I would agree with that for the larger service providers. I think people would might be more apt to go and use the vCloud on AWS because they can have quicker time to market. I can go out here and I can put in my credit card number and I can provision services literally in a matter of just a few minutes, right? Larger service providers probably, like whenever you were at your previous employer, probably have a self-service portal where they can go and log into and deploy VMs and apps and services just as quick as they can on VMware Cloud on AWS. But I think the smaller providers would be the ones that would see the hit.
Yeah, and I think also what might happen is, and I've actually commented about this as well, I think the VMware Cloud and AWS is going to be a really good target for disaster recovery. So customers are going to treat this as their second site, so to speak. It gives a really good bed of resources that are there available when you want them, but also scalable as well. There's the elasticity, which isn't, I don't think it's part of the first release just yet, but I think Frank was mentioning that the second release is going to have that Elastic DRS and
Elastic,
yeah.
So you can set a threshold just for the listeners. Maybe if they haven't listened to episode 129, that's the one that Anthony is referring to, where we had Frank Deneman from VMware on. We talked about the VMware Cloud on AWS. So one of the things that's coming in the future is Elastic DRS. So you can set a threshold at say 80%, and once my CPU memory usage gets to 80%, it will automatically add in a host to the cluster. So at like, say for instance, if you're in retail, Black Friday, you know, you can kind of plan accordingly and scale up and scale back instead of going to your boss and having to always ask for more hosts. So Jim, I'm curious what your thoughts are on this topic.
Yeah, so my thought, you know, I'm serious. Do you guys see, I see the using VMware Cloud on AWS as a really good fit for the lift and shift from one data center to another to kind of act as a midpoint. But the way the pricing works, do you guys see it as a viable thing for we're just going to get rid of the data center and put it all there?
The pricing is interesting. Like, it's a minimum of four hosts, roughly 6,000 to 8,000 per month, you know, depending on what period you take up, like from memory, just rough numbers. So, look, it's not cheap, but when you take all the considerations into effect, when you take into consideration the cost of procuring servers, storage, networking, the cost of racks, the cost of power, cost of internet, I think it actually becomes quite viable. That said, a smaller business with a couple of servers isn't going to have the requirement to go and use two terabytes of memory to start off with, right? So it's definitely at the moment targeting a certain niche of customer, which is why it's kind of started in the main US market, because obviously smaller businesses in America are large businesses everywhere else. So those smaller businesses might have, you know, 4 to 5 to 10 to 20 servers, then it's viable. That's kind of what I think of it there.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at too. That's what keeps kind of going through my head. I've historically always worked in the SMB space, what I like to call the four hosts and the cloud of dust kind of implementation. And you know, the money's not that far off to where you can kind of make the case. Now, I don't know if you guys saw that being announced as well, but they kind of did some work on the VMware Foundation product as well. It really got overshadowed, but they've rolled vSAN into it as well. I think they dropped it maybe down to 3 hosts, but made it a nice little licensing package to get all your vSphere, all your ESX, and vSAN in a nice little bundle. Did you guys catch that announcement?
Yeah, I didn't. The Cloud Foundation is so interesting. Like, I'm not a massive fan of the Cloud Foundation. Like, I get what they're trying to do with it. I just think execution-wise, it's very hard to sort of push people into that. Like, I know guys like IBM, whatever they're calling their cloud these days, it's not SoftLayer, it's not Blue, it's whatever it is now. I think it might be the IBM Cloud. I mean, they kind of use that foundation to a certain extent. Other guys like Rackspace, I believe, might use it, but... Yeah, the foundation to me is like this utopian sort of platform drive, which I don't think a lot of people would buy into just yet.
Oh, no, so no, not Cloud Foundation. So what they used to call the Essentials Edition, and then for a while they called it VMware Foundation Edition, which was, you know, the... Now they're calling it... I even misnamed it. So now it's called the HCI Acceleration Kit. And under 25K. Yeah. So there's a couple blogs out there on it. I'll put them in the links here if you guys want to put them in the show notes or something like that. But yeah, it seemed pretty interesting for the smaller shops or even like your remote office kind of utilization, you know. So.
There you go. Yeah, what you were describing didn't sound like Cloud Foundation. So,
except they've now scaled. Well, now it's single socket hardware, but it includes vSAN, which it never did before, which is pretty nice.
Essentially, it's like Veeam Essentials bundle that you can get, which is 6 sockets that includes backup and replication and Veeam One. Speaking of vSAN, do you don't use vSAN, do you, Jim?
I do not.
No, you're a nimble guy, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct. Very happily so.
Awesome. So what else? Jorge, what else do you got going on there? Anything else that you important from VMworld that you want to share, perhaps?
Besides that website, which contains absolutely everything and all the features and all that stuff, I think Anthony said already, VMware is releasing a lot of... software for developers. Like, for example, they announced the vSphere integrated containers version 1.2, so that will support Docker host, and that's another huge bet from VMware to the developer and sysadmin world. So I think that, but you just said that already globally, so but this is one of the biggest announcements as well, right? So about the big 1.2. Are you using some kind of containers, or you are seeing out there huge container usage?
Not yet. I think there's a certain niche set that uses it. Obviously, if you're coming out of university in the States at the moment, if you go to the Stanfords and those sorts of MITs, the developers coming out of there, obviously, they know containers as their first sort of thing, right? But the guys that are coding the majority of workloads today, they're kind of more, traditional in a sense. So, people kind of dabble in containers, or a certain type of financial institution might use containers for a particular reason. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. Vic is really interesting. So, I was on an early alpha for that, where it was basically put together by all these separate commands and CLI, and it was kind of cool back then. So Vic 1.2 has evolved quite nicely. The really cool thing about Vic is being able to provision Docker hosts natively as well. There's some coolness there, whether, containerization and that way of doing dev picks up over the next 12 to 18 months, who knows. But I guess VMware is kind of hedging their bets a little bit and getting ready to take the market if it does get more speed,
Well, to kind of play devil's advocate there a little bit, Microsoft also has been placing a lot of their bets kind of in the not, I shouldn't say placing bets, but then have been making products that are specific to containerized environments. Windows Server 2016 supports not only Windows containers as well as Hyper-V and Docker containers. And then they've actually adjusted Nano Server to be only applicable for containerized applications and workloads. So it no longer can run as an infrastructure Hyper-V host. It is only for containers. So, I mean, I think regardless of what hypervisor, I think that's that the hypervisor underneath the covers, like, doesn't matter whatsoever. It's all about the application, the container, and what the development team is most comfortable utilizing to get things out as quick as possible.
Oh, yeah. There was one interesting announcement I just actually remembered. So, and this actually was real under the radar, but it's quite interesting. It's called VMware HCX. So don't ask me what HCX means, but basically it's a technology that's allowing transportability and mobility of workloads, applications, and VMs cross-cloud, any cloud. So it's kind of interesting. So when I say any cloud, any VMware-based cloud. And it's using NSX as a background, and it's got some mechanisms where it basically hooks up, joins and connects up different clouds, and allows vMotion of workloads across those clouds fairly seamlessly. So the idea is not new. In fact, VMware have talked about that since I can remember 2010, 2011. The technology now is there with NSX. I can deliver that layer 2 service in the VXLAN, to VXLAN across a couple of clouds and have mobility across those networks. So, yeah, if you guys, I'll actually post a link in the article in the chat as well. But HCX is an interesting one, and I don't know if you guys actually heard about it, because I certainly didn't until after the fact.
I've not heard of it, so we will definitely.
Yeah, just please share the link of the blog. That would be really amazing. I've heard about it during the VM world, but I mean, a more comprehensive blog from you, that would be really great.
Awesome. Well, we're coming up here on the end of our time. Jim, any closing comments?
Yeah. So, like I said, the announcements seem to be they're not lackluster. The NSX stuff, the vSAN stuff, is all really good. The conference this year was great. I don't know if this was mentioned before, but moving the V brown bag stuff out to the content builder was an awesome thing. They brought some great crowds. Yeah, it was awesome to see all the people over on that end of the area all week long. So thanks for having me, and I appreciate it.
Awesome. Jim, thanks. Jorge, any closing comments?
Well, I think that just to close it, talk really quickly about that vulnerability on the SVGA. So just please update as soon as you can if you have 6.0. And other than that, thank you for having me today. Thank you.
Yeah, that's definitely a good call out there. If you have vSphere 6.0 and you subscribe to the Veeam community forums, you would have saw in Ghost Dev's Digest there that there is definitely a vulnerability that you want to get patched as quick as possible. All right. Well, listeners, thanks so much for joining us. This was episode number 131, and next week we will be at Microsoft Ignite doing some podcasting as well. So if you see us on the show floor, feel free to stop by, and we'd be happy to have you on. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.